Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I share some pieces that are currently available on The Conversation. I chat with Patty Thomas about fat representation in movies, and I spotlight a blog from Fat Body Politics about the right to talk about fat. The work of fat studies scholars often finds a home on The Conversation. The Conversation, an online magazine hosted out of Australia, is a specific type of magazine which targets PhDs and other academics to write pieces for a lay audience, oftentimes integrating research into easier to understand language. Recent pieces in The Conversation that I've enjoyed reading have included Darren Powell's piece, Childhood Obesity, Are Parents Really to Blame? The great Jackie Weix has a new piece out, How Anti-Obesity Campaigns Reinforce Fat Stigma. Jenny Lee's piece, A Big Fat Fight, The Case for Fat Activism, is one of my favorite things ever. And then I myself have a recent piece in there as well entitled Media Attention Suggests Fat May Be the New Sexy. My original title was Who Knew? Fat is the New Sexy. And in this piece, I talk about the media attention that the Fat Studies Conference got. Anyway, if you haven't checked out The Conversation before, give it a whirl. Go to the website and Google for fat and see what comes up. Of course, you're going to get plenty of perspectives from the other side as well. And in fact, a few weeks ago, they ran a 7-part series called The Obese Nation. But it's great to see such a mainstream magazine that has such high readership, also allowing the door for fat studies scholars and other critical voices. So check it out today. Joining me is Patty Thomas, a medical sociologist from Las Vegas who has been involved in fat activism for the last 10 years. Patty, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's great to be back.
Yay. So what I wanted to talk about today actually was about fat people in culture. So, I mean, positive representations of fat people are really hard to find in mainstream culture. So I was hoping that you might be willing to talk to us about any fat-friendly or fat-positive books, movies, music, anything like that that you personally enjoy.
Well, I have to tell you that, you know, I what I love most is film.
Okay.
So when you mentioned to me that you wanted me to do this, I started thinking about people in film that I've liked and films that I've liked. And so I've kind of outlined a few here.
Oh, fantastic. And you've got a list.
Yes, I got a list.
Oh, I love lists.
But I need to, you know, do a little warning about the list.
Oh, okay.
I love film noir.
Nice.
All right. So I watch a lot of old black and white movies on Netflix. And I love, like, kind of dark stuff. So I don't watch a lot of what they call women's movies. So there are things like Muriel's Wedding and My Big Fat Greek Wedding, which might be like really fat positive films, but I have no idea.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because I've never watched them. So these might be a little quirky because of that, because I have a kind of quirky sort of wild taste in films. So I'm very dark when it comes to films. So having said that, the first one on the list is Hairspray.
The original?
The original. Nice. I like better than the musical, but I liked both of them. I love John Waters. I think John Waters is just wonderful in picking really quirky characters, people who are kind of on the margins of society, and coming up with all of these fun ways to talk about them and turn them into human beings.
Yes.
On the screen. And I get his sense of humor. I'm, you know, love listening to him talk, too. So Hairspray is cool. You know, Ricky was cool in it. Divine is wonderful. I miss Divine. I love him. And, you know, it's just, it was a fun, fun movie. And it was like the first time that I saw it was the first time I ever saw a fat girl on film having a good time.
Oh, wow.
And winning, if you will. You know, and I just loved it for that. And while I'm talking about John Waters, I also have to give a little shout-out. This isn't directly on the list, but I have to get a shout-out to Lust in the Dust.
Right.
Because Lust in the Dust is not a John Waters film, but it was directed by Paul Bartel, who did a lot of collaborations with John Waters. And it starred Divine, and it also starred, I'm not going to remember her name. Anyway, they were just, I mean, it's just like a romp of big love and lust. It's just a lot of fun. So you have to have a taste for it. You know, if you're not somebody who likes really quirky, off-the-wall movies, you might not enjoy it. But I just really loved that. And it is definitely the first film I ever saw. Hairspray is the first film I ever saw where I was just like, wow, that's so cool. The fat girl is cool, you know, kind of thing. Second on the list is a movie that I just saw recently, even though it's from the 1980s, and I found out about it because people were talking about it on Facebook, and it's called Baghdad Cafe.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. I wouldn't call it a fat-friendly movie in the sense that it addresses any kind of issues around being fat.
Uh-huh.
I would call it fat-neutral. Because the woman who stars in it is, and I don't know if I'll say her name right, but it's Marianne Sagebrecht. She's a German actress, and I want to try to, I've been hoping that Netflix will put more of her movies on because she was just absolutely beautiful in this film. And it's basically a story around her getting lost in this very small town in California. And sort of just trying to brighten it up, and she just sort of happens to be fat.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not an important...
Right. It's not a plot point, but it's also not something that's seen as unusual.
But nobody's telling her to lose weight. Nobody's hating her because she's fat. Jack Palance falls in love with her.
Nice.
You know? And there is a relationship between her and a woman, so there is also some sort of, you know, like... homophonic, I guess is the right word,
uh-huh.
overtones to it, you know, so it's they don't really quite come out and have a relationship, and I'm not going to ruin the film too much beyond that, but I'm just saying that it was just a beautiful film about relationships, about people. It isn't the kind of film that I'd watch often, but I was really happy that I watched it, and I thought that she was gorgeous. I mean, she was just absolutely gorgeous in this movie. And loving, and it's just a very, very sweet film.
Well, I'm excited to have something new on my must-watch list.
Yes. So I don't think they stream on Netflix outside of the U.S.
No, they don't. We can't get it here.
What a pain. But, yeah, if you can find it some other way, absolutely recommend it. The third recommendation I have is kind of weird. It's really not a film as much as it is a body of work by an actor named Sidney Greenstreet. Do you know who that is?
I don't.
All right. Probably most people don't. He died in 1954. He was in The Maltese Falcon. He was in Casablanca. He was in a bunch of different films with Humphrey Bogart. And he weighed like 300 pounds, and he was this big, fat guy. And a lot of times, in the film, they called him the fat man. He got, you know, but it was never like he was bad because he was fat. He was evil frequently.
Right.
He was a bad guy frequently, but he was a very genteel bad guy. And he often wore like these white suits, and he just always talked with this really cool accent, and it's hard to describe him other than he was just wonderful in everything he did. He almost stole the show from Bogart every time he was in a movie with Bogart.
Wow.
He lived to be 74 years old. Was that you? Did I miss? I heard a noise. I hope that's okay.
Yeah, no, we didn't catch it here.
He lived to be 74 years old. He died in 1954. He was born in like 1879. And he was very healthy up until the last few years of his life. He was always fat. And, you know, I think that he's kind of fun because he shows that there were fat people before 1980, which a lot of people don't think there were. And he also shows that you can live to a ripe old age, because living to 74 in the 1950s was a ripe old age.
Absolutely.
So he was cool in a lot of ways. So I highly recommend, if you watch Maltese Falcon or Casablanca, again, look for the big guy.
All right, keep your eye out for Sydney.
Yeah, he was. He had a much bigger part in Maltese Falcon than he did in Casablanca. And he was basically the leader of the gang in Maltese Falcon. So let's see. I want to not take forever here, so I'll go on to the next one. The next one is Canadian Bacon. Do you know that?
I do, yes.
Michael, it's the only movie Michael Moore did that wasn't a documentary. And the only reason I love it from a fat point of view is that John Candy went to rescue Rhea Perlman in the CN Tower in Toronto, which is, I don't know how many stories high, like 90 stories high. And he ran up every single stair because the elevator was dead.
Oh,
so he ran up like 90 flights of stairs to save her. And in the meantime, he's being chased by all of these black ops soldier guys and all of these, you know, very fit black soldier guys, like, quit about the 44th floor because they couldn't go any further. So I love that, because John Candy makes it to the top, you know, love conquers all and everything. He's able to do the stairs, and they've got, you know, the really so-called fit guys all dying on the bottom, which I'm sure that, you know, Michael Moore put in there for his own benefit as well. But that's my favorite part of the movie, so that makes it worth watching.
Absolutely.
And then the last one is probably another one that nobody's ever heard of, called Who's Killing the Great Chefs of Europe?
Ah.
It's a farce from the 1970s. It shows my age. And it's basically, the plot of the movie is that Robert Morley, who is this fat English actor, is a food critic. And every time he writes something bad about one of the chef's food preparation, you know, and their specialties, they get killed. And so they're trying to solve this, and it's a farce. There's, like, a lot of stuff going on in the movie. It's very quirky and out there. And there are a lot of fat jokes, okay? So there are some people who would watch this movie and probably be offended by it. But what I got from this movie, because it was a farce, is that the movie is not making fun of fat people. They're making fun of fat jokes.
Okay.
So it's kind of different in that way. But I experienced it very positively, because it was, like, so silly that, you know, the fact that they were pointing out that this guy was fat was silly, too. Like, why would you make these jokes kind of thing? So I may be, you know, this is, again, one of those things that I have very quirky taste, so it may be somebody else's, may not be somebody's cup of tea, but I found it hilarious, and the plot is hilarious, too. The other part of it is that all of the chefs die. It has something to do with their specialty. Like, the best example of this is one guy did pressed duck, so he was killed by somebody pressing his head in the duck press. you know, I mean, every time one of these guys died, they died by their specialty.
Right.
In the kitchen. So they're going to remake it, and they're going to remake it here in Vegas, from what I've read. They're going to be Who's Killing the Great Chefs, and the chefs will all be chefs here in Vegas. So it may come out next year. It'll be interesting to see if they retain the Robert Morley fat side of it. I have a bad feeling it's not going to be a good remake, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, how often are they good? I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, the really sad part of this exercise is I had to really, really dig to come up with five things that I thought were good. I mean, it sort of made me realize how much film is bad when it comes to fat people.
Right.
So.
Well, you know what I love about your list, Patty? I love the fact that most people know Hairspray, and most people are probably familiar with some of the movies that the man Sydney has been in. So, like, Casablanca and Maltese Falcon.
Right.
But I love that the other three movies that you mentioned are ones that not a lot of people have probably heard of, or they might have heard of, but they haven't seen. You know, so hopefully this will give some ideas to people who are interested in finding some fat-friendly, fat-positive, or at least fat-neutral examples of fat bodies in films, because as you mentioned, they're difficult to find.
Yeah, they really are. And, you know, I just realized that I forgot who's eating Gilbert Grape.
Okay. Johnny
that's
Depp.
That's a good movie, too. So that's a very tender movie, though, that I cried every time I watched. I've watched that movie about four times now, and every time I watch it, I just bawl my eyes out. So, and, you know, I don't know whether you know this or not, but Johnny Depp starred in that movie, and he starred with
Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah, but the woman who played the mother.
Oh, what's her name?
Darlene. I cannot remember her last name. And I am ashamed that I can't remember it because I should know her. But I know her on Facebook. And she writes sometimes about how much Johnny Depp has kept in touch with her.
Oh, that's so nice.
And he has, in fact, you know, spoken out for body diversity. And is has been pretty open to fat acceptance, and I'd love to see him do a film, another film with a fat woman. I think he'd be willing to do it if somebody came up with a project for it. So, but she said that he actually like calls her once a year and makes sure she's okay, and like just really connected with her and still stays in touch with her like 20 years later. So,
well, you know, just one more reason to like the guy.
Yeah, exactly. So I knew I liked him for some reason.
I knew we liked him for some reason. Yeah.
Yeah. But I love film, and I'd love for, I mean, I think that film is a way that we really could overcome fat stigma, because you see people who are fat just doing life things. It makes you, you know, forget about the stigma.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, one of the most powerful ways to make something normal is simply to make it visible.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Excellent. Well, Patty, thank you so much for joining me today and for bringing along your list.
Well, it was fun. I love movies, so, you know, I could talk about them forever.
Well, you know, feel free to start up another list, and when you've got some more you want to come on and talk about, just drop me an email and we'll have you back.
Well, be careful what you ask for.
All right, Patty, thanks.
All right, take care. Thank you.
Spotlight today is a piece entitled The Right to Talk About Fat Experience. The piece is from Fat Body Politics and was published on May 24, 2012. Quote, when fat people try to talk about their own experiences with body shame, fat stigma, or weight-based discrimination, they are always challenged in a way to undermine the significance of them, with people explaining that some of those experiences also happen to people in thin bodies. While the truth is that many of the shaming tactics used towards fat people do happen to thin people as well, the outcry from thin people to also feel as though we must validate their experience as well ignores the reality that they have always had their experiences validated in every mainstream body positive organization or campaign that has ever existed. The dominant discourse that surrounds the body acceptance movement as a whole is one that is directly geared towards thin bodies, and the lack of voices from fat people are not noticed unless you are fat yourself. People who think that the voices of thin people are not being talked about enough in fat-positive spaces are inadvertently reinforcing fat oppression. They do this by undermining the experiences of fat people because they feel as though it happens to everyone. Not only is this incorrect because the motive behind body shaming and stigma of a fat person and a thin person can be drastically different, but the ways fat stigma takes part in it being a fat person in society turns into actual discrimination. When dismissing fat experience by saying that thin people also have those same experiences, a person is completely ignoring that they still have the privilege that comes from living in a thin body. Fat people do not have to make space for thin people when discussing their own experiences, because of this privilege and due to the reality that thin people do not make space for our voices in their own discussions. When a dominant group tries to invalidate the experience of an oppressed group, it is actively working to silence them. Coming from a place of privilege and expecting an oppressed group to make space for your experiencing is not only insulting, but shows that you are not really interested in understanding the difference among experience or forms of oppression. This also happens within the feminist movement when white feminists expect black feminists to open their spaces to be inclusive, when those same white feminists do not make their spaces open for all women or experiences. As a white, fat female with some thin privilege, I do not have the right to expect fat spaces for people who are larger than I am, or any other group that I do not fit into, to open and validate my experience. If they allow me to be part of their space, I am not only grateful for it, but I spend my time listening and learning, not expecting them to include me. I also actively try to understand the privileges that I do have so that I can understand the difference between my own experience and theirs. We should be celebrating difference, not pushing it aside and ignoring it. As fat people, we have the right to talk about our experiences without being bullied into validating the experiences of thin people who feel like we don't talk about the similarities among us. We need to start expecting people with thin privilege who are also advocates of body acceptance that our experiences need to be discussed and that our bodies are not hidden or brushed aside. We need to call people and organizations out for creating a form of acceptance that doesn't challenge fat stigma or discrimination. We need to tell them that our experiences matter, that they are different, and that difference is something that can help all people, regardless of size. End quote. Closing the show is The Donnas with I Don't Want to Know.